The opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
Good day, everyone. Welcome again to another edition of Boomer Generation Radio. This is your host, Richard Address, coming to you from the cloudy, snowy studios of WWDB here in Greater Philadelphia. And we're streaming live on WWDBAM.com. You can visit us at BoomerGenerationRadio@gmail.com or go to the Boomer Generation Radio page on Facebook. And again, a reminder that our shows are podcast on www.JewishSacredAging.com if you want to hear some past shows. And after this word from our friends at Kendall, we'll be back with our first guest, Dr. Peter Lichtenberg from Wayne State University. So just stay tuned.
Hi, this is Kendall staff member Sheila Sylvester. This portion of Boomer Generation Radio is brought to you by Kendall Outreach. Kendall Outreach serves the field of aging by raising public awareness of important health care issues of older adults, and it provides education and training in the development and implementation of comprehensive approaches to safe, individualized, long-term care practices. Kendall Outreach has been sharing Kendall's approach to quality care with consumers, advocates, providers, government agencies, and related organizations since 1989. To learn more, visit KendallOutreach.org.
Welcome back to our first segment here on today's edition of Boomer Generation Radio. We are delighted to be joined by Dr. Peter Lichtenberg, the director for the Institute of Gerontology and a professor of psychology at Wayne State University. Dr. Lichtenberg, I hope you're there. Are you there?
Good morning. I'm
Hi.
Glad to be with you.
Hi. Hi. You're in Detroit, right, Wayne State?
I am in Detroit. Yes, indeed.
It's lovely. I was just up there 2 weeks ago in Ann Arbor doing some stuff. So welcome. Welcome to Boomer Generation Radio. I appreciate it, Dr. Lichtenberg. I appreciate your time and everything. And welcome to the show. And lots to talk about your work. But there's one word that I think I need to ask you to define. Geropsychology. What is that?
Yeah, geropsychology actually is the newest specialty in clinical psychology, and it is basically clinical psychology expertise with older adults.
Ah, so in light of the longevity revolution and the aging of the boomers, and so perfect, perfect.
Yes.
And so you've done a lot of work and written a lot on the psychology of aging and issues that relate to how, from what I'm reading of your bio and the material that we, that you sent us, sort of like how I at, let's say at age 80 or 75 or 70 make decisions and how those decisions are influenced and if we are subject to manipulation or scams by other people. Am I misstating that at all?
No, that's definitely part of it. You know, the idea being that as the population ages, there are certain reasons to be a little bit more careful about knowing how decisions are made and whether they're influenced by either psychological variables and psychological vulnerability or neurocognitive variables, the loss of memory and problem-solving skills.
So you did, according to this, in 2013, the first nationally representative study on predictors of older adult scam victims. What does that mean?
Yeah, what we did, there was a national survey that we were able to get a couple of questions put in about whether people would report whether they'd been the victim of fraud, and we were able to look at other variables in that survey prospectively and see what predicted and whether there were any patterns of who was defrauded more than others, because all of us are vulnerable mm-hmm. to being scammed. But we found that people who were both financially and psychologically vulnerable were much more likely to have been scammed.
So do people change as they age on how we make decisions? And am I going to make a decision at 70 different than I did when I was 35 or 40 or 50?
You know, probably not a ton, unless something is happening that's making your world smaller and you're getting more isolated and maybe struggling with loneliness and depression, or you're starting to have some cognitive slippage and you're not solving problems as well. And the second thing that happens with cognitive slippage and cognitive impairment, really, is not only do you lose some of the skills, but you lose the ability to detect when there's a kind of a danger going on with a scam or so forth.
So this goes, this from what I'm hearing, this goes way beyond just the phone scam. You know, somebody calls you up and says, if you give me your credit card number, you've won, you know, 3 months in the Bahamas with, you know, whatever, and or the whatever, these types of scams that are perpetrated all the time.
Yes, and what we worry about mostly, I mean, anybody can be scammed for something once and get knocked off balance, but you hear stories on a regular basis of somebody, for example, who gets called up with a grandparent scam. Someone says, you know, your grandchild is in Peru and they're in jail. They hit somebody with their rental car. They really need this. An attorney, you got $2,500 processing fee. That's bad enough, but 5 days later when they've wired over $200,000 on repeated wirings, that's what we really are worried about, because these people who are perpetrating these kind of frauds don't let up once they get a hold of somebody who's vulnerable. They continue after them until they can get everything out of their bank accounts.
And it's easy to be preyed on, isn't it? Especially through the internet, because this seems to be a growing phenomenon, the internet scam type of thing.
Yeah, older adults are vulnerable to a few types of scams more so than others. As they say, anybody can be scammed, but older adults particularly are vulnerable to lottery sweepstakes scams. They're also more vulnerable and lodge more complaints with the Federal Trade Commission for scams where people are pretending to be a government, IRS or Medicare, and asking for demanding money and personal identifiers immediately. And those scams have really taken in a lot of older adults. But we shouldn't discount the drive-by scams. You know, in the neighborhoods, people do track sort of who's been widowed. They wait, you know, 6-8 months, and they come by, walk up to the door, say they found something that they can repair for you cheap. Go ahead and repair it, charge you twice what they quoted, and as they say to us, if you pay it without too much complaint, they know they're in, and they are going to try to get you to pay a lot more. So, you know, these things come in all sorts of shapes and sizes.
So, you know, I guess the easiest question, or the hardest question maybe, is, so how do you protect yourself against these types of personal affronts and scams? What can a person do?
There's a lot a person can do. First of all, you sort of have to develop some heuristics, some rules for yourself. Never make the decision immediately. So you need to stop and check it out with some other people. And that's the biggest one, because once you do, you start to get the input that, oh, that doesn't sound right. That's too good to be true. And if it sounds too good to be true, it usually is.
Usually is, right.
Yeah. So that's the biggest thing, is staying connected to other people, talking about these kinds of things. And I think that what's happened in our society, though, is there's a real chill around talking about finances, especially between older adults and their children. Some older people feel like if they talk about finances with their children will want their finances, so they're frightened of that. We call that financial entitlement. It's one form of financial exploitation.
Right.
But as a result, there's a real chill on it. Nobody talks about these kinds of things. Nobody says, hey, here's our plan. If there's something that you're concerned about, you know, doesn't seem quite right, or it's just a request for a significant amount of money, who are you going to talk to? What's the plan for this? Your financial planner, me, your adult child, you know, the banker. Who are you going to talk to? I think that's a key thing. But I think we have to also recognize that psychological vulnerability means that people are, their world is getting tremendously smaller, and they're having trouble connecting to other people, probably because of physical disability, maybe some mild cognitive disability as well. And so, you know, we have to continue to make efforts to find those most isolated older adults and have some way of connecting with them.
You know, go ahead.
I also think that what happens, like with the sweepstakes scam, you get somebody who's, you know, in their 80s, who's has some undetected cognitive problems, they won't believe that this isn't the real thing. And that lack of awareness comes with real cognitive impairment, real cognitive change. And that's a tough thing, too.
You mentioned something that comes up, has come up a lot in many of the shows here we've done, talking about this cognitive issues and changes that could be just the naturally changing cognitive changes that happen with aging. But it's, again, at the beginning of the show, you linked it to this sense of, and you use the word isolation, and it comes up so much in some of these conversations about this the challenge of living alone, of being isolated, of being cut off from other relationships, human companionship, and it seems to exacerbate this cognitive decline. Could you just speak to that a little bit and how one can prevent that? But there's so many people living alone.
Yes, there are. There really are. And, you know, the greatest group, the fastest growing group, are women over the age of 85. Less than 15% of them still drive a car. So right there, you've got a huge transition in terms of quote-unquote independence.
Mm-hmm.
And very few people take the next step of finding alternative transportation to keep up their activities that they were doing. And, you know, we just got to keep talking to people about finding ways to connect with the community around them. Whether some of that is done virtually, whether some of that is done through volunteerism, it's so important. And what I have found is that there's two pathways, really, to some of these scams and other types of financial exploitation. One is this immense psychological vulnerability, where people don't feel valued. Mm-hmm. It's not just that they're missing others. It's that no one in their life is validating who they are and what they do as having an important role in any part of life. And we all need to know that what we do is important to somebody and who we are. And so that's the first pathway. These scammers are really good at creating these, what seem like these wonderfully friendly relationships and you know, I understand you, where your family has forgotten you, that kind of thing. The second pathway, though, is usually a little bit separate, and that's the cognitive impairment. That's cognitive changes beyond what we would expect in normal aging.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is when we start to have mild cognitive impairment, where it's beyond what would be expected with normal aging, we also start to have trouble regulating the checkbook, knowing whether we paid all the bills correctly. A lot of times what people notice is that either campaign contributions or contributions to a charity are repeated, and adult children see, oh, wow, you know, you keep paying this, because as soon as you send in one check, you get a request for another one. So
people
forget things and keep paying those. So those are two pathways that I've seen the most in terms of how people get into financial exploitation.
We're speaking with Dr. Peter Lichtenberg, the director of the Institute of Gerontology and the professor of psychology at Wayne State University, about the impact of scams and on older adults, and that cognitive issues and the changes and how that impacts it psychologically and in the real world, and issues of isolation that are associated with that. And we're going to be back with Dr. Lichtenberg right after this message from our friends over at Kendall.
Hi, this is Kendall resident Harry Hammond. This portion of Boomer Generation Radio is brought to you by Kendall, a system of not-for-profit communities and services that advocates for and empowers older adults to reach their full potential. Kendall is committed to working with others as we together transform the experience of aging. To learn more about Kendall, that's K-E-N-D-A-L, visit discoverkendall.org or call toll-free 888-759-0128.
Welcome back to our first segment here on Boomer Generation Radio. Today we're speaking with Dr. Peter Lichtenberg, the director of the Institute of Gerontology and a professor of psychology at Wayne State University. We're speaking about this issue of, and the subject of geropsychology and the impact of some cognitive issues and the impact of scams on older adults and some of the challenges of that. There's a scam going around now, right? You've probably seen this about from the IRS, because it's tax time, about the IRS. In fact, I got an email about 3 weeks ago from the IRS saying that I'm in big trouble unless I called them right away and handed over everything, you know, all the personal information. And banks do this too, scams about banks. Is that's right, right?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. And those are a couple of the ones where older adults are the most targeted and fall the most prey to.
So this challenge of cognitive impairment that comes up again over and over again, I guess one of the obvious questions that you probably get asked all the time, either in class or when you and you write in your research, is, okay, so are there ways that I can prevent this? I mean, you know, we see in magazines and newspapers, if you do 27 crossword puzzles a day, you will be able to push back any cognitive impairment that you may have. How much of this is true? How much of this is hype? And can you actually exercise your brain as we age to prevent some of this?
Okay, I'll put it two ways. You can improve your skills. So if you want to improve your memory, you can do training in memory and improve it. You want to improve problem solving, you can do training in problem solving and improve it. So you can improve your skills, but we have no evidence yet that you can prevent cognitive decline. And the group Lumosity that puts out uses a lot of cognitive games just settled a $2 million penalty with the Federal Trade Commission for problems with the way that they portrayed their product. Hmm. So the science is not there to say that this will prevent cognitive decline. We know, though, that you can improve your skills. So that's always a good thing.
So, and what about, this just came into my mind, because also I've seen people talking about this on, you know, TV and stuff. What about physical exercise? Does physical exercise have any impact upon, I mean, other than keeping the body limber and for falls, but on the brain and how the brain functions, especially as we age?
I think all cognitive neuroscientists, if you really ask them what's the one thing people could do to keep their mind as healthy as possible, they would say physical exercise. The brain uses 20% of blood flow and oxygen. And anything, physical exercise that improves blood flow improves the usage of oxygen.
Wow.
Physical activity is very, very important.
So I'd imagine as more older adults become more sedentary, that really exacerbates the decline.
It does, and we have a saying, it's never too late to stop being a couch potato.
No, so that old canard about you can't teach an old dog new tricks is wrong, right? You can teach.
Totally people. Wrong, and the benefits can be huge in a study of people over the age of 90 who are self-possessed couch potatoes, they improve their strength dramatically after getting into an exercise and strength program, and they improve their balance, and that's so important because of falls.
So I want to go back to something you said before we took the little break about people who are subject to these scams in your research, in the work that you've done, in the writing and the research that you've done. You use a term that somebody calls up somebody and they're alone and they're isolated, and there's this human contact, even though it's somebody over the phone or maybe knocking on the door, but that they seem to value, they get value from this. That's a very sad commentary, isn't it, on our society, that there's so many people who are isolated and living alone that they'll almost willingly go along with something maybe in their soul they know is wrong, but this provides them with some sort of human contact. There's a relationship, even though it's a bad relationship. Is this part of the dynamic?
It is definitely part of the dynamic, and the Investors Trust years ago did some taping of people who were scamming other investors, and then interviewed them. What they did was they established commonality. Interesting little experiment. If I use a Confederate and know your birthday, and my Confederate tells you that birthday is the same as yours, you're more likely to give them a rating as a more friendly person. Mm. So any commonalities that we can establish, whether it's religious beliefs, political beliefs, things that you can find out pretty easily on internet values, that's how the scammer begins. They try to establish that commonality, which is what makes one of the scams the supermarket scam, where an older person approaches another older person, talks to them about family, they've gotten locked out, shows them pictures of their grandkids, and then ends up stealing their money, is one of the saddest ones, because it's violating, you know, some of the very basic interpersonal ways that we relate. But that's what these scammers do. They want to establish those commonalities, and then, depending on how isolated the older person is, it can turn very nasty, and they will start bullying, badgering, screaming at, threatening the person if they don't continue to send money and so forth.
If you could summarize, before we start running out of time for this segment, could you just categorize, if it's possible, like the top, right now, what you see in your work and research, what are the most prevalent scams that are being perpetrated on older adults?
Yep, the three most, one are the Jamaican lottery or other prize winnings. You've won the lottery. I mean, the movie Nebraska captures that so beautifully.
Right, right. That's true.
It really does. Yeah. And that scene in the bar where he's sort of a celebrity is sort of the point. People who need money kind of feel like their ship may have finally come in.
Right.
The second one are these government imposter scams, so being an IRS representative or a Medicare representative and saying you owe this money and you need to pay it immediately. And the third one are really these calls for, and they vary, but some kind of a version of the grandparent scam where some other family member is in trouble and we need you to help them send money so they can process, you know, legal things and get moving on.
Right. We get emails about, you know, so there's somebody, you know, has been detained in some country and send them thousands of dollars so they can get bailed out.
Yes.
Which leads me, Dr. Lisenberg, to the use of social media, like Facebook and emails and stuff. That's becoming more popular as a means to attract people to get scammed, correct?
Absolutely. Scammers do a tremendous amount of research, and they know a lot of things about individuals they're targeting.
Well, how do they find that out?
Social media is one way. Another way is you can buy these personal information services that give a whole history of a person, where they've lived, kind of what's what some of the other highlights have been in their life. But social media is a big way of tapping into sort of who's who and getting the right names and, you know, that kind of thing.
So if there are people, there may be people who listen to this now or on the podcast who are older, you know, adult children, and they're taking care of mom or dad, and they may see some of this. What's the best piece of advice you can give to the caregiver to watch out for so that mom or dad doesn't get scammed?
I think people just need to talk about this before there's any crisis and talk about it more in general in terms of kind of financial planning. If there's anything that comes up financially, what's the plan for that? Who's going to be called in? Who might be the confidant? So forth. So that everybody knows that what the scammers count on is getting this older adult alone with no one to talk to. Even if they have adult children, they just try to corner them that way. But if people have talked and sort of prepared for these things, they can avoid them because they can spot them much more easily.
Right.
The last one that's going around, especially for older adults, is a computer repair. So it works like this. You get an email that says there's something wrong with your computer. Call this number. We'll fix it for free. And you call the number, you give them essentially access to your computer, and they end up trying to take your bank numbers
Wow.
and so forth and so on, or get you to pay a $300 fee as well. So
Wow.
that one is easy for older adults to fall prey to because a lot of older, younger, we're not all that technically savvy, and we think, oh, my gosh, something's really wrong here.
Right.
Better call them, get it fixed.
In other words, don't go give access to anybody out of the clear blue to your computer because you may never see it again.
And don't believe when somebody sends you an email saying your computer has a virus or whatever.
Right, right. We've been speaking with Dr. Peter Lichtenberg, a director of Institute of Gerontology and the professor of psychology at Wayne State University, about this issue of geropsychology and scamming and some of the things to watch out for. And I really want to thank you, Dr. Lichtenberg, for your time and a lot of really good information and tips. So I wish you continued good luck in your research and your teaching. And thank you again for being a guest here on Boomer Generation Radio. Take care.
Thank you.
Thank you.